Okay, so our second session this morning then is on how to build a Bible study library. And clearly this is a useful addition to how we might prepare and implement our Bible study program. So I'm going to talk about this for around about half an hour, which will take us into the time allotted on the program for our memorial meeting this morning. So how to build a Bible study library. Let me just go back and put that on screen. Sorry about that. Slight technical hitch there. Okay, we're in business. So why would we want to have a study library? What are the critical reasons? I can think of two or three good reasons. The first is that we want to learn the value of having excellent resource material, to try and accumulate at least 5 books for future study in all parts and aspects of Scripture. Now, let me just see if I can think about that. Just wait one moment. Not there. I'll just see if I can find a particular document about that. Hang on a minute. And it's not there, but I do know where it is. It's in here. One of the things that I wanted to sort of make about this is that most of us as Bible students are not such original geniuses that we're going to discover everything for the Bible all by ourselves, without ever reading anything from anybody else. The reality is, of course, that we're going to be borrowers and readers from other sources. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. That's fine that we do that. But in fact, what I'm suggesting is it's vital that you do that and that you have a good resource. And my personal experience is that generally those people that are the best Bible scholars tend to also, surprise, surprise, have the best libraries because they've got a resource material that they have managed to accumulate. So one of my personal rules is to try and accumulate books for future study. I've seen young brethren say they've gone to a Bible school and they've seen all the books on display for sale, and they've said, I've already got that one on Malachi. I'm studying Malachi at the moment, so I've already got that one, so there's nothing that I need. Well, what about the one on Joshua and the one on Chronicles? You're never going to study those in the future. So you've got young brethren that haven't committed themselves to saying, if I'm going to be a serious Bible student, I've got to have a good library. So I need to start building that now. And you don't buy library books just for the study you're doing at the moment. You buy them for all the studies you imagine you might one day possibly do in the future. Ah, now that suddenly broadened your vision as to what you might be wanting to buy off the library shop, either at the ecclesial hall or at the Bible school library sale. So this is my rule. Wouldn't matter what the subject was, I think you should be able to go to your library and go flick, 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 at least 5 books on any possible conceivable topic. That's the start of how I would do Bible study. And by the way, one of my rules for Bible study is that generally, whatever I'm looking at, I know brothers have different ideas on this. Some brothers say you should do your own study and get into the Scriptures, and only when you've finished your own study and reached all of your own conclusions should you then open some other brother's writing and see what he might say. That's good if it works for you. What I have found, what works for me, is my very first step is I climb on the shoulders of everyone before me. Because I find that when I climb on the shoulders of all the people who have gone before me, and some of them were giants, so by the time I'm standing on top of their shoulders, I can see a long way into the distance. It's a huge help. And I don't pretend to be such a genius at Bible study that I can do all of this unaided. In fact, what I find is that if I can read everything I possibly can lay my hands on, what it does is now fill my mind with lots and lots of ideas and thoughts, and then I start sifting. Then I start thinking. Then I start studying. And as I do, that gets ejected, that gets rejected, that gets kept, that gets modified, that gets altered, and you start to sift the material that you've got. But I find that I would always prefer to read everything that I've got available in my library as the starting point of my study. That's the very first thing I would do. Then I'd start to study the subject from there. Yes, Ben?
What about going online and finding Bible talks by other brethren who have spoken at Bible schools and conferences, would you begin, now that's available to us, 20 years ago it wasn't, would you also begin by listening to their talks?
Okay. Well, I'll come to that later on, because I'm going to talk about online resources a little bit later. So can I... Can I keep the question? It's a very valid thing, but I'll come back to that later. But the bottom line is, to me, that's just another resource. It's an available resource. There's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't use it. I'll come back to the key as to how you use it appropriately a little bit later on. So let me give you a couple of tests with regard to this, in case you think that that's quite a lot. Don't forget that there's cunning strategies for how we might be able to locate stuff on various Bible topics. So, for example, if I was to say to you, okay, we want to look at the events of AD 70, what would you have on your bookshelf that you could go to? Josephus? Yes, all right. So Josephus, yes, I'd accept Josephus.
The Olivet Prophecy.
The Olivet Prophecy by?
John Knowles.
Olivet Prophecy by John Knowles, yes.
John
Olivet Prophecy by John Ulfrey, yep.
Last Days of Judah's Commonwealth
by Brother Thomas, yep. And obviously notes on 2 Peter and Jude, books that relate to the events of AD 70. And what other resources there? There's another major resource that I could think of. Well, when I say major resource, two large chapters at the end of a book. Ways of Providence by Robert Roberts. The last two chapters of the Ways of Providence are devoted to the events of AD 70, the calamity of AD 70. Last two chapters of Ways of Providence. So there you are. There's five. You could do it. All right, let's try another one. What about the Feast of Tabernacles? What could we go to? Five resource books. Law of Moses by Robert Roberts. Law and Grace by Brother... W.F. Barling.
Schoolmaster, John Martin.
The Schoolmaster by John Martin on Leviticus. Yes, because it will deal with some of the detail of the feasts. Yes, it's not dedicated to the feast, but it will cover it where it turns up in Leviticus, especially Leviticus chapter 23. So yes, I'll accept that.
Feast, sacrifices, and offerings.
By?
I forgot who that's by.
Brother F.E. Mitchell. Yep. Feast, Sacrifices and Offerings, or Offerings and Feasts by Brother F.E. Mitchell. That's another book in the truth. The Expositor Series on Leviticus. That's another one. And there's another terrific chapter on the parable of the calendar based on the main feasts of Israel in what book? The parable of the calendar based on the feasts of Israel. So by Brother John Carter. And it's smack in the middle of Delight in God's Law. So there's at least five resources on that subject. What about something slightly more tricky? What about the character of Saul? Five resource books on the character of Saul. Man David by Harry Tennant will certainly deal with the part of Saul, because there'll be the moments of interaction between David and Saul. So yes, the man David would be a good possibility. Samuel, Saul and David by Brother Harry Whittaker. I've also got the Sunday School Notes that will deal with Saul. I've also got the Story of the Bible that will deal with Saul. I've also got the Warriors of Faith, which will include a chapter on Saul. I've got Smith's Bible Dictionary, which will have a character study on Saul. I've got Men of the Bible by Lockyer that will have a section on Saul. I've got Tyndale's commentary on the 1st of Samuel that will cover the life of Saul. And there's a fantastic chapter on Saul in what book, written by what brother? Just one chapter. I'll give you a clue. It's called The Mind of Saul. Oh, now where's that? It's a whole chapter on the mind of Saul. It's by Brother L.G. Sargent in his book A Sound Mind. So now, do you see what I'm saying, why you need to start reading the works of the truth? How did I know that there was a chapter on Saul in Brother Lou Sargent's book A Sound Mind? Simple. I've read the book. Simple as that. I've read the book, so I know. And what you do is you read Brother L. Sargent's book, which of course is sitting by your bed because it's one of the books you're reading at the moment, and when you finish it, it goes back in your bookshelf, but you happen to remember all those various things that are covered in that book because one day you might want them. One day you might want to access that resource material again. So I believe that you should have a library that allows you to access at least 5 different places that you could go to for material on any subject. And when you've got to that stage, I think you've got a good library. So keep building. The second thing is that we need to recognise that one of the most satisfying aspects of our spiritual development is to actually be enriched by the reading of books which can guide and shape breadth of character and depth of wisdom. I think that well-read people are well-rounded people. Their knowledge is well-rounded. Their language is well-rounded. Their thinking is well-rounded. They've got depth of character to them. Because that's what reading does. Reading expands the mind. It doesn't just expand the knowledge, it expands the mind. It expands our appreciation of a wide diversity of things, and it certainly will enrich us spiritually when we can read the particularly the works of the truth. I think we need to learn the wisdom of good plagiarism. Now, does everyone know what the word plagiarism means? Can someone define plagiarism for me? Okay, so taking someone else's ideas. Ben, you got a slightly different definition?
Presenting them as your own.
And presenting them as your own. So plagiarism. So I'm going to suggest to you that there is such a thing as good plagiarism. Now, what would bad plagiarism be?
Not giving credit to the person you stole
from. Not giving credit to the person you stole it from. Probably you wouldn't want to if you'd stolen. Yes, that's a possibility. Yes. Yeah, copying something word for word, that's bad plagiarism. But let's take Brother L. Sargent's book On a Sound Mind. If I was studying Saul, I might read that chapter from Brother Sargent as part of my study. Then I'd also do my own study. And after my own intensive study, I might come to the conclusion that I agree with Brother Sargent. But when I stand up, I'm not going to say, now, brothers and sisters, let's look at the mind of Saul. Oh, before I do, let me put up my bibliography list in terms of where I've drawn from. Am I going to do that every talk? No, because we borrow from many sources, some of which I've probably forgotten about in terms of where it's all come from. The critical thing with good plagiarism is that we borrow ideas from many books and many places, but what we then do is we weave it into our own studies so that finally we're convinced that that matter is right, that that suggestion, that that idea is right. Now, the moment we've come to our own personal conviction that that matter is right, it's now your ideas, not theirs. You own it. I don't say you own it instead of that person, they own it as well, but you now own it as well. You own it in your own right because you've come to your own settled conviction on the matter. I'll give you a good illustration of that, and you'll know this, brother. We had Brother John Martin come and speak on Elijah, and so that got me fired up. Quite a few years later on in our ecclesia, we had Brother Jim Cowie come and speak on Elijah. And I thought, well, this is going to be interesting. And of course, Jim stands up, and he does sound suspiciously like Uncle John from time to time. So I thought, oh, I'm going to test this brother. And I was a young Turk at the time. So I went up to Jim and threw him a few curlies. See the measure of the man. See whether he's up to scratch. And you know what I was really doing? What I really wanted to know is, was he a plagiarist or an original Bible student? Well, Jim came through with good colours. Because when I said, well, what about this and why that? Oh, he said, yes, but so and so and thus. So he wasn't just repeating something he'd heard from Uncle John's studies. He'd made it his own. It may have been that some of the material was the same, but it was now Jim Cowie's. But in order for it to become Jim Cowie's, he'd had to do his own study to the point that he had a conviction on it and he could prove it for himself and to others. That's good plagiarism. There's nothing wrong with that. That's a wonderful thing. And I think especially in the context of the writings of the truth, I know and you know that Brother Thomas and Brother Roberts and Brother Carter and Brother Sargent and many other brothers beside would rejoice to think that we were reading their writings and coming to similar conclusions on biblical matters, but that we could prove that for ourselves. They rejoice at that because they know that the heritage of the truth was being preserved and probably extended down through time. So good plagiarism. Don't be afraid, don't be embarrassed to borrow material from other books, but make it your own. Then, if I can take Ben's comment, the moment you've made it your own, it's no longer stolen. It's now borrowed permanently. Yes?
Wouldn't you say, too, that really a good writing is just a good plagiarism of the Bible? It's just taking the comments of the Bible and doing a further commentary.
Yeah, I mean, it is expanding and explaining the Bible. So most of us, if we took the bare text of the Bible, would still be none the wiser at times as to what it was all about, and that's why writings are so helpful. So in that context, the online matter, Ben, as I see it, is just yet another resource that we're free to plagiarise from, but I think there are some rules of engagement. So I'll come back to that. Can you remind me when I get to online? Because I think there are some rules of engagement. Avoid the danger of filling your library with worthless, useless, or erroneous writings. Misspelling there, I apologise. Ensure that non-Christadelphian authors write from a biblically conservative basis. I've got a few books in my library that I should toss out, not because they're going to pervert me doctrinally, although they probably are doctrinally unsound, but basically they're rubbish. They're a complete waste of time in my library. I'm never, ever going to use them. I probably picked them up from somewhere thinking, well, this could be quite a useful book on Jeremiah or whatever, and it's useless. It's pathetically useless. It's written by a person that doesn't know anything about Bible scholarship. Well, get rid of it. Don't stock your library with that sort of stuff. Start with the works of the truth. Build a great library of Christadelphian works. And one of the things I thought I would do is, this is one of the documents that you'll be sent out, is the first 40 Christadelphian works I think you should stock your bookshelf with. And another document you'll get is the first 100 books that you should add from non-Christadelphian sources, just to get you going. And obviously there's more than that, and I can think of a few I've bought since then that probably should be added to this list. So much so that I might take this home and slightly rework it before I email it back to LA, but you'll get it in due course. So around about the first 100 books that I'd recommend from non-Christadelphian sources, and the first 40, we might even build that to 50, of the first Christadelphian works that you should put into your library. Yes?
Do you find those books in a secondhand store or online?
You're talking about the non-Christadelphian ones? Well, a number of these are still available for sale, and I'll come to that when we come to the library itself in a moment. We'll talk about that shortly. So don't stock your library with stuff that's going to be worse than useless, or worse still, that's going to be detrimental to your spiritual development. And that's a concern I have, is young brethren filling their library with Christian writers in preference to, in place of, instead of Christadelphian writers. I personally believe, by the way, that as a community, we are second to none in the quality of our exposition of the Bible. Second to none. That's not just a boastful comment from some little community who are trying to make themselves bigger than they should be. I think that because we love the scriptures and believe passionately that they are the inspired word of God, our brethren write from that perspective, that this is God's word to be treasured and valued and sought out and understood. And that pervades the way that our brethren write. And so I think that our exposition of the word on 100 different things is second to none compared to many other things. And many's the time where I've done some research, done some Bible study, come to a conclusion, been absolutely excited at what I've discovered, and then picked up Brother Thomas and found that Brother Thomas had it all there all along. I've done that more than once. So, you know, don't abandon the heritage of what we have. All right, let me just talk then about online for a moment before I come to the subject of building the library itself. And I've just got to watch my time, don't I? Online resources. Right, a couple of things. Firstly, there's a number of online Bible study programs. The Testimony magazine ran a review of online study programs a few years ago. It's probably slightly out of date, but it was a useful cover of most of the critical programs at the time. And while some of those programs have advanced, what's good about those articles in the Testimony magazine is they gave you some of the pluses and minuses and pros and cons of those programs. But what do you think would be the most useful ingredients of any online study program? What do you think the most critical things are that we should be looking for? Any thoughts?
Strong numbers.
Yep, Strong's numbers, presumably, yep. Strong's and Strong's numbers, yes. Accessibility and ease of use, yes. I think it's those search capabilities that allow us to search other resources. And I use, by the way, I just use Online Bible, Apple's version, of course. And I find Online Bible useful because it allows me to obviously look up a number of other translations. I can do a search. I can do a, you know. What I like about it is that, in effect, Online Bible is also your Englishman's Greek and Hebrew, isn't it? Because you can click on a word, it tells you the Strong's number and the Strong's meaning. You can type that number back in and say, give me all the occurrences of 3954, and it goes, and there's Englishman's. So I've converted it from Strong's to Englishman's, just like that. And I used to always use books, and I still do, but one of the reasons why I like it on a computer is because I travel a lot. And so it gives me access to that on a traveling basis. And once you get the hang of it, it's good. Of course, one of the things you've got to remember with online Bible study tools, and it's really good to remember this, is that nothing takes the place of personal meditation. No computer program is ever going to be able to do the Bible meditation for us. And it's the Bible meditation that produces powerful Bible studies and powerful Bible talks. So it's only ever a tool. It's simply the online translation of what we once had in books. Hands up those that do use online. Hands up those that use eSword. Okay, so pretty well sort of mix and match. Hands up those that use anything else. What do you use?
Blue Letter Bible. It was a free program.
That was the critical ingredient? Free program.
Yeah. Otherwise, they just use the books.
And for Mac, yeah, exactly. So I think most of us have access to something like that, and to be honest, most of them are roughly similar, aren't they, in the context of those fundamental things. I think the second thing, though, is to be aware of online access to other literature. Firstly, Christadelphian Works. Have you all got Christadelphian Works through Libronix? Who's got Christadelphian Works, both volumes? Can I recommend that you do that if you haven't got it? Is everyone familiar with what it covers? So the Christadelphian Works, which comes from the Christadelphian office, is a 2-CD pack, and it operates through Libronix here in the States. Is Libronix a States company? I think it is. And isn't Libronix hooked up with Logos software?
Yes.
So Libronix runs this, and what that enables you to do is to run these two Christadelphian CDs. One of them covers Elpis Israel, Eureka, Law of Moses, a whole bunch of the writings of the pioneers, and the other one has got the Christadelphian magazine from the year dot when it started to the year 2000. I think, I don't know if there's an update since then, but certainly the main one covers up to the year 2000. Now that's a fantastic resource, because what that means is that you can go in and type, if you want to study Satan of Job, study Satan, and up comes every article in the Christadelphian that's ever covered the subject of Satan, right down to the time that Brother Roberts started the magazine. That's a marvellous way of accessing our Christadelphian resource. Now, I've got all the Christadelphian magazines at home, but guess what? They're stashed in boxes because they just take too much space on your library shelves. But if you can access that online, that's a really wonderful resource. And why I like that and why I recommend that is, what's that doing? It's taking you back into the writings of the Brotherhood, back into the writings of the Brotherhood, and using that as part of what you look up. Look, when I was actually young, one of the things that we were encouraged to do as young Bible students was that the first thing we should do when we were studying a topic was to go to the index of the pioneer writings and see whether those brethren had ever commented on that subject or that passage. So say you were studying the man of sin from 2 Thessalonians. What you would do is you go to the back of Elpis Israel, the back of Eureka, the back of this, the back of that, and you'd look up to see whether Brother Thomas commented on the Second of Thessalonians. Didn't matter what the book was about. Brother Thomas comments on everything somewhere. I mean, he was a Bible student. All good Bible students will get to the Second of the Thessalonians at some stage. And you might find something really useful in the back of some book that had nothing to do with Second Thessalonians, but there's a comment on it. So it's another form of resource. Well, in a way, this Christadelphian works is the same. It actually takes us back into the writings of the brethren, and I think that's a really good thing to add to your library if you haven't got that. The only catch to that is that as a result of that, unless you can just deregister the thing, you also get every time you open Libronics, software says we'd like to sell you the 50-volume copy of this pastor and the 35-volume copy of this priest and the 100-volume copy of Spurgeon and so on and so forth. So you have to keep on clicking saying no thanks, no thanks, no thanks, no thanks. Breathe a sigh of relief and get back to the writings of Brother Thomas. It's great. So that's a good resource. And then lastly was the matter, as Brother Ben's raised, of the tape resource. Well, you're quite right. I think this is a resource. By the way, we did have this resource, because if I go back to when I got married, we used to have, interesting actually, because Nathan, our son, married Susanna, and we used to have a class, Pauline and I had a class with Susanna's mum and dad. Every Sunday night after the lecture, we scuttled back to their place, put on toasties, cheese, tomato, onions, coffee, and we had one of those old reel-to-reel tapes. You know the reel-to-reel tapes? You ever seen a reel-to-reel tape? Right. So you said one of these great big old clunky tape recorder machines, put the reel on, wind the tapes through, press go, and be Brother John Martin on something. We'd sit there taking notes, we'd say stop, and you'd hit the pause button, you'd say, why do you think he said that? That's a good quote, and you'd write that quote down, you'd press go again. And it was a really great, every Sunday night after the lecture we did a John Martin tape. So I guess we sort of had that resource, but it wasn't nearly as sophisticated as the current online versions. Yes.
Like a black and white photograph.
No. The bottom line is that we did it. So we did actually resource exactly that same material in a similar fashion. And it was exciting, far more exciting than boring CDs and stuff. So where can you download from, if you don't know? Yes, Tom.
One other CD, or actually it's a DVD, that's available from a brother out of Texas.
Yep.
He has virtually all of the Christadelphian publications. They've been put into a PDF format, and they're available for $30 or $40, and it includes such unique things as a photograph of every single page of H.P. Mansfield's Bible. So if you want to see how he marked in his margin and how he marked his Bible, you can get that detail. Plus, it has all of the other Christadelphian publications as well.
Who's got that, Tom? Do you know?
You know, I'll have to see if I've got it on my other computer. I'll see if I can.
Texas, not Stan Isbell, is it?
I want it. The brother's name, I think, starts with a G.
Janusa,
that's it. Exactly.
Steve Janusa, okay.
It's several years old. It's maybe 3-4 years ago that I got it, but it's wonderful because it has many of the old publications.
Okay, all right. Well, that's really useful to know. Yep. Interesting to track that down. Now, the tape resources, the ones that I know about are obviously Livonia Tape Service, Bible Talks for You, which is Josh McInturf running out of New Hampshire, and The Vault, which is... anyone come across The Vault before? Okay. The Vault is from a couple of brethren in Australia, and it emerged at the time of the College of the Prophets last year. College of the Prophets, have you heard about that? So this is a school of the prophets. College of the Prophets is 3 weeks, solid. So that's why it's called a college rather than a school. You've gone up it. And if we ever hold a 5-month one, we'll call it the University of the Prophets, but we haven't got around to that yet. So yeah, that's another resource there, a very large resource of Christadelphian talks. Now, yes? That one from Australia,
yeah.
It's called The Vault.
The Vault.
The Vault. Now, I don't quite know how you access that, but someone in the group may know, all right? I believe that it's absolutely fine to borrow that sort of material, because again, you're doing no different to writing to reading a brother's writings. You know, that's their spiritual consideration of that subject. A tape is simply an oral representation of a brother's view on a subject. So there's no problem accessing that. But the rule of engagement is, as we said before, is you've got to make it your own. So you don't copy word for word. And most importantly, you try very hard not to regurgitate word for word. Now, there's another online thing which I'll mention as well. And here's an illustration. I can mention Jason because I know he won't mind. So Jason said to me, do you have a Keynote form of that Bible study chart? And I said, no, I've only got a PowerPoint. But of course, because Apples are so clever, you can convert it from PowerPoint to Keynote anyway. So I gave him a download of that last talk simply because it was the quickest way of including that copy of the Bible chart. Now, I've got a view on downloads because I go to various parts of the world and women come up and say, hey, that was good. Can I have a download? And that's fine. They want a copy of your PowerPoint, and that's great. But I have heard then of a brother subsequently that is giving those same talks somewhere else using, surprise, surprise, the identical PowerPoint presentation that was actually mine. Now, they do say that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, but within the context of the truth, I don't think we should do that. In fact, I felt so strongly about that that I thought that on the front of every one of my PowerPoint presentations that I would put a slide at the start, so that if everyone took a download, it says that this is the work of Brother Roger Lewis, you're welcome to read it, understand it, digest it, and use it for your own study, but if you're ever giving a presentation, you must do your own PowerPoint presentation so that it's your own work in the truth, not mine. Actually, I wouldn't say it quite like that, but you know what I'm saying. Because there's a Bible principle here that says, and where does it say this? God says, I hate robbery for burnt offering. What do you think that means? Where is that from, by the way? Is it Malachi? There's actually two very similar passages like that. And then we must stop. I know there's one in Isaiah like that as well, and I can't remember where it is. But the idea behind the phrase is, I hate robbery for burnt offering, is that you can't take someone else's burnt offering for the truth and present it as yours. You're perfectly at liberty to listen to their material and to use it for your own study, but what you must then present is your own work in the truth, not theirs. So, as I say, it may be that you say something similar, but it's got to be in your words, written on your notes, using your PowerPoint and your efforts and your labours and your endeavours, not theirs. What you're doing is robbing someone else to give a burnt offering for God. God says, I won't accept that. Burnt offering must come at personal cost to yourself. So, Brother Tony?
Oh, isn't that what David said?
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the passages, which is at the time of buying the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. That's right. Yeah, so the one in Isaiah is 61 and verse 8. I, Yahweh, love judgment. I hate robbery for burnt offering. I hate robbery for burnt offering. And the other one, which is the record in Chronicles, says, David said, nay, I will verily buy it for the full price, for I will not take that which is thine for Yahweh. I'll not take that which is thine for Yahweh, nor offer burnt offerings without cost. 1 Chronicles chapter 21, verse 24. So I think there's a divine principle here. With all of this magnificent material we've got available, is you've still got to turn that into your own offering to God by your own labours and endeavours, then it's acceptable to him. But the mere regurgitation or the mere copying of someone else's work, then presented as your own, is not your burnt offering, it's theirs. And of course that's how we make good Bible students of ourselves, is that we've become plagiarists, but we've paid the necessary price, which is we've done the work to make it our own. Yes?
So what about if you're doing for your Sunday school out of classes or something, going through one of the pioneer works such as Zealous Israel, when each of the brethren comes up and looks at the section, are you saying more they should read it, understand it, make it their own, and then present it, as opposed to just going through the...
Okay. I think that reading and pioneer writing is different, because what you're doing is reading the pioneer work together to enjoy and expand on the pioneer writing. So naturally, that pioneer writing is now the base of the talk, because, well, that's what it's about. But we're not pretending to stand up and actually give Brother Thomas's material without saying it did come from Brother Thomas. We're reading Brother Thomas at the time, but the objective of reading Brother Thomas is to take us back into the Bible. I might just come to that later on today, because we're going to talk about the benefit of the pioneer writings. And I have a feeling about pioneer Bible classes or study classes that there is a right way and a wrong way to do them. So we'll come back to that in terms of your paragraph by paragraph business. Let me just close on this thought, because I'm just going to run through this. You're not going to have time to take it down, but don't worry, because you're going to get a copy of it. But we are out of time and should close. So this is the fundamentals of how I build a study library. I have a section for exposition on the foundation works of the truth, or the foundation principles of the Bible. I have a section called exposition for general. I have a section called exposition for books of the Bible. And they all go in book sequence right through the Bible record. In fact, I've got two sequences based on the size of the books. There's little books, there's big books. So depending on the size of the book. That's because I have a passion to have all the small books in the same row, because I'm fussy on that sort of detail. But you can mix and match if you want to. It's your privilege. It's your library. Make it your own. I have a section called reference work, which is for dictionaries, a reference section for lexicon, a reference section for translations, a reference section for atlases, a reference section for history, a reference section for geography, a reference section for archaeology, a reference section for canon and manuscript books, and then we come on to pioneer works. There's quite a few reference sections. And in this book list that comes out, there is the first books that I think are useful under every one of these sections. All right? So you'll get a fairly good resource here of how to build every one of these sections. This is all the detail behind those headings. So these are the headings. This is the good oil behind the headings of what needs to be stacked into the library. Doctrinal books. Because there's some very good doctrinal publications out, and I have a section for that in its own right. Then, a section for prophetic, a section for devotional, a section for exhortation, a section for thematic, a section for apologetic. What's apologetic? Anyone know what apologetics are? Yeah, the word apologetic means defending the Bible. So these are books to defend the Bible. So, for example, under apologetics, I would have such obvious things as Josh McDowell, Evidence That Demands a Verdict, versions 1 and 2, or volumes 1 and 2. Frank Morrison, Who Moved the Stone? Haley's Alleged Discrepancies of the Bible, and J.J. Blunt's Undesigned Scriptural Coincidences. They are all apologetic works, defending the integrity of the Bible record. So great to have some apologetics in your library. A biographical section, political, practical on marriage and family, practical on the truth in daily life, pictorial, ecclesial, Jewish, I'm sure you'd be happy with that, Neil, and general. So I'm not saying there couldn't be some other sections, but those are the fundamental sections for the breakup of my library. And then, as I say, you've got quite a few subsets that start filling in the gaps. I don't know how many books I've got in my library. She wouldn't have a clue. Probably several hundred. I'd take a stab and say 300 to 400, maybe more. But I've read 90% of them. So one of the things with books is, by all means, start building a study library. But the golden rule should try to be that as you buy books, you read them, put them on the shelf, read them, put them on the shelf, read them, put them on the shelf, read them, put them on the shelf. Don't buy truckloads of books and put them on the shelf. That's not, you know, you need to actually make this library your own. And I think part of how you do that is that they go through your filtering system before they go into the filing system. Why? Because now you know what's in that book for further resource. Remember? The Mind of Saul by Brother L.G. Sargent. Okay, I think we'll close at that point. And you'll get that information as part of the package deal afterwards. All part of the cost.